Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to this session of the 2014 Fundraising Success Virtual Conference and Expo. Thanks so much for joining us today. I'm Margaret Battistelli-Gardner, Editor-in-Chief of Fundraising Success, and I'm pleased to welcome you to the Big Data, Little Data, What's the Difference, and What Do You Do With It All session sponsored by Melissa Data. Today, you'll get information on how to avoid possibly the biggest data disaster there is, collecting it and wasting it. Probably the only thing worse is not collecting it at all. Before we get started, let me take a second to point out the Tips for Attendees widget on your console. It's the blue one with the wrench on it. If you missed the Tech Tips video we played leading up to the webinar, you can always click this widget for more information. Also, we do hope that you'll enjoy this session so much that you'll want to share it with your colleagues, and if you do, the hashtag for the conference is FSV14. Also, as you know, attending all of the sessions in today's conference is applicable for 3.5 points in the education category of the CFRE International Application for Initial Certification or Recertification. You can find the documentation necessary, to track credits that you've earned during the show in the Resource Center or the information booth and via a link in a post-event email. If you have any questions, please email virtualshowinfo@apco.com. Our speaker today is Jeff Regan, Vice President of Development at WETA TV 26 and Classical WETA 90.9. Jeff's also one of the authors of a Fundraising Success multi-channel Moxie feature every other month in the magazine. He has more than 20 years of marketing and fundraising experience in both the commercial and nonprofit sectors. Prior to joining WETA, he served as Vice President and General Manager of Customer Relationship Marketing Agency Merkle, of their nonprofit practice, and before that he worked at M&R Strategic Service, where he spearheaded the creation of a new department to integrate fundraising efforts across multiple media channels. He also was Vice President of Online Marketing and Communications for Defenders of Wildlife for 6 years. Before I turn it over to Jeff, I want to encourage you to ask questions throughout the session. If time allows, we'll get to them at the end, or perhaps throughout. But if you don't have your questions answered, no worries. Look for the answers in an upcoming issue of Today in Fundraising, which is our free daily e-newsletter, which you can subscribe to at fundraisingsuccessmag.com. Okay, Jeff, welcome, and let's turn it over to you.
Thanks, Margaret. Welcome, everyone. Hope you're enjoying a cloudy and actually slightly snow flurries. There's not snow flurries out my window kind of day in Washington, D.C. Just one word on WETA. We are the Greater Washington, D.C. PBS and also classical music NPR station do such work in the D.C. area. We're also a national provider. We're the owner of the PBS NewsHour, Washington Week, and the co-production partner of Ken Burns, and produce a lot of the national PBS programs here out of the WETA offices. So with that, I will dig into the presentation. So as Margaret mentioned, we're going to be talking about big data, little data, what's the difference, and particularly what do you do with it all. I want to start by just getting a quick sense from you all in the use of big data, and we'll for now just leave that in quotes. Do you consider yourself to be a beginner, intermediate, or advanced? I'm going to leave you just a few seconds right now to click one of these choices, beginner, intermediate, advanced. It's a subjective choice, and that's fine. Just choose whatever is most appropriate. Okay, and let's see what kind of responses we have. So 61% beginner, 37% intermediate, and 2% advanced. Okay, I am going to then try and make sure we're covering the basics as we go through this presentation. I'll try to highlight some sort of more basic elements, and feel free to chime in with questions as we go. I would say overall, honestly, this presentation is probably designed more at the intermediate level, with some elements of advanced and some elements of beginner, but I'll try and focus, particularly highlight some of the introductory elements. So the first question is, before getting to the first question, the agenda, we'll talk a little about what big data is, we'll talk a little bit about why big data is important for us, and then we'll focus primarily on how might we use big data with some quick case studies. And at the very end, if there's time for a few minutes in terms of Q&A, we'll talk a little bit about how we might use big data in the future and hear from any of you in terms of your thoughts. So, without further ado, what is big data? I promise not to read all the slides, but I will read Wikipedia's definition. Big data is high volume, high velocity, and or high variety information assets that require new forms of processing to enable enhanced decision making, insight discovery, and process optimization. Okay, so what does that really mean? Well, I think that means a few things. The first thing that means is that big data sizes are constantly a moving target. So when people say big data, it means different things to different people. And frankly, what it means, in 2014, December of 2014, is quite different from what it meant 10 years ago. And 2 or 3 years from now, big data will probably mean something else in terms of the level of complexity of data. It also means that it depends on, on who's saying this and their ability to process data. So what's big data for Amazon, is frankly far beyond the reach of nonprofits today. And what Amazon might call very, very little data is actually big data for us in our nonprofit community. So I would suggest for today's discussion, what we're really going to be talking about in terms of, big data, quote unquote, is the data sets that we currently use, and particularly the data sets that we might wish to use for fundraising and also for, other speaking with our various constituents, other communications with our various constituents. So moving on from there, let's talk a little bit about, what are the different types of data that we might want to use. I bucket them into three big buckets. The first, and certainly the most important from a fundraising perspective, is what they do with your nonprofit in terms of giving history. So, this is certainly recency, frequency, magnitude, essentially the size and frequency of gifts. But it's also the channels. It's very important to record in your databases what channel a gift is being given through, whether it's a premium-based gift or a non-premium gift-based gift. Maybe it's through your, e-commerce store or a symbolic gift, or maybe it's just heavily incentivized by a premium. Or maybe there's other elements to it. It's giving to a specific area. It's, for example, a designated type of gift. So recording the specific details around the gift are very important. So that's bucket one, and, it's the most important bucket from a fundraising perspective. But it's also the one that we're very used to. So buckets two and three have the ability to enhance our fundraising performance, and these are used, I think, at this point a lot less, and where a big opportunity exists for nonprofits to increase fundraising. Bucket number two is what our donors and prospects, our constituents, do with our nonprofits, and also to some degree beyond, all their other interactions. So this includes, email activity. Do they open your emails, click on your emails, take actions of various types? What's their level of social media engagement with your nonprofit and also beyond your nonprofit? What's their level of social media activity? And what specifically do they do? Are they, for example, we can target social media grass tops to be evangelizers for us. What do they do on your website? And what do they do more broadly in other online activity? Do they attend your events? It's a great passion indicator. Do they call your 800 number or your member services number? Or do they, email your member services? Very great passion indicators, great predictors of planned giving, and great elements for models such as upgrade models or retention models. What are their interests? All of this type of data can enhance your ability to communicate with your constituents, your donors and your prospects, and increase their value. I think the key thing is for each nonprofit to decide, what is the most valuable among this type of data for you, and where is it best to start? So often,
Jeff,
for example, start... I'm sorry?
Jeff, I'm sorry. It's Margaret. Can I just pop in for a second?
Sure.
One of our attendees have asked, what is premium versus non-premium, which you had mentioned. Could you just quickly explain that?
Sure. So a premium-based donation is a donation where someone receives a premium or a gift. So, for example, we might send out a direct mail piece and say, if you send in $35 or more today, we'll send you a WETA mug. or we'll send you a WETA tote bag, or we actually have an e-commerce store where they can go and purchase gifts. That's getting a premium or a thank you gift, essentially, whereas non-premium based giving is where there's no thank you gift.
Great, thank you.
Sure. Great question. Please keep questions like this coming. The third big bucket of data is who the person is. And this, I think, is also in our nonprofit community is yet a very underutilized set of data. It's being used extensively in the private sector, not just by Amazon, but by, you know, banks and retail companies, insurance companies, and at this point, most any large company that has consumer contact is using third-party data. And this is essentially demographics, psychographics, and other third-party data on individuals. And for our community, it also includes third-party data on where a person is giving, what other nonprofits they're giving to, and how many gifts they're making. And that's a powerful data set to use as well. But again, you need to evaluate for your nonprofit where's the best place to start, what's the lowest hanging fruit, and is the potential return worth the cost. And for beginners, I would suggest starting small. So, for example, I was going to mention earlier email activity, like has someone opened or clicked on an email? Those people are often more valuable. That's a good place to start. Someone has called your 800 number or emailed member services or attended events. That's another good place to start. Those are the lower hanging fruit in terms of finding higher value donors. So let's take a little step back and just briefly talk about why is big data important to us. So if we look at the target analytics donor-centric data, you see here this is pegged to Q2 of 2009, and it's up through the second quarter of 2014. You know, there's been a pretty substantial drop, a 10% drop in donors in the U.S. This is to all the charities that use Blackbaud target analytics, and more than 14% drop in new donors. So pretty substantial drop. So we need to find ways of getting to new donors. And to that end, I think it's important to understand that people are different, and particularly in our society today where there's so many different communication vehicles and methods and where people's expectations of personalization are so much higher, you know, raised by the Amazons of the world, it's people want to be communicated with at a more personal and targeted level. And people differ. Donors differ in terms of, do they donate because they support, they just donate to a charity because they believe in it? Or are they donating because they believe in the cause? Are they donating to get benefits or premiums? Again, these thank you gifts. Is it situational? Are they just looking for immediate tangible impact in specific areas? For example, in a disaster. Donors have different interests and preferences. And given the rich diversity of types of communications that people prefer, there's a lot of power to careful targeting and also segmentation and communication to different people based upon their interests and needs. I think one trap we need to avoid is the trap of targeting traditional retirees. For most larger nonprofits that built their donor files off of direct mail, most of us spend our time optimizing our communications for the traditional retirees because they dominate our file. But that makes it very difficult to acquire new members, say affluent professionals who are more in their 40s and 50s as opposed to traditional retirees in their 60s, 70s, and 80s. And if we're going to grow our files in the future, we need to figure out how to crack that nut and to appeal to new and different audiences. So, let's dig into it. How might we use big data, both now and in the future? I'd like to talk about how we might use big data to enhance acquisition, retention, and overall lifetime value of our donors and our donor files. Let's start with acquisition. We should absolutely be using data for careful targeting within acquisition, and also potentially for messaging, and let's talk about that in a moment. On the targeting side, within cold acquisition, if you're not already using co-ops and the co-op models, then this is groups like Target has a co-op, and there's the Wyland Direct co-op, and Abacus co-op. There's a number of co-ops, and they each have models. Those are powerful ways of leveraging third-party models based upon extensive data, both your data and other nonprofits' data, and usually third-party data, demographic and psychographic data. And they build models, and they can help you find better prospects to grow your list. At a more advanced level, there's also possibilities for lists that you may rent, for example, in mail acquisition, to do some modeling, and rather than mailing to everyone on that list or everyone that's not, you know, duped out as a existing donor in your file, to actually do some modeling to determine who to target. So it can even start as simple as doing ZIP plus 4 targeting within a given list, and certainly there's more complex modeling available beyond that based upon third-party data. I think that perhaps the lowest-hanging fruit of all, along with, say, co-op models, is building a lapsed reactivation model. That, you know, you need for most of these models that aren't third-party, that are done for your file, you need some scale. So smaller nonprofits may need to band together or may struggle with this, but for medium, especially larger-sized nonprofits, a lapsed reactivation model built by a modeling company can be incredibly powerful in determining, you know, among all those lapsed donors in your database, who are the right ones to target, who are the ones who are most likely to reinstate as valuable members. Another type of model is a warm prospect model. Those people who are currently supporters of yours but not donors and not lapsed donors, you can actually build models around them as well. I think that the place to start is really in the targeting. Eventually, and you know, I've done some testing around this with some success, is tailoring messaging and offer by segment. So we actually think about, okay, this particular list and or this particular model, these people are non-premium or non-thank you based donors. Let's target a acquisition mail package to them that does not include a premium. Whereas this other segment, say, is very premium responsive. They like their thank you gifts. And let's target a mail piece that's appropriate for them. So that's sort of the acquisition and lapsed reactivation bucket. I think a second big bucket, and I should say, I think in terms of low-hanging fruit, that first bucket is arguably the most important bucket. There's a second big bucket, which is a little trickier, but also very important, of segmenting your existing file. And segmenting it, you know, as we talked about already on giving history, and also not just giving history, but potential. So you know, you can do things like wealth scores and see if someone has the potential to be an upgrade and target them, say, for upgrade. Passion indicators. We talked about earlier, have they contacted your member services or gone to an event? Interest areas. What are the most relevant interest areas for you and for your nonprofit? Motivation. Are they a philanthropic donor, or are they a donor who wants their thank you gift, or do they have some other motivation, and also demographic, psychographic segments. The easiest are typically gender, age, and geography, but one can also develop more complex segments across variables. So for those large nonprofits that have the capacity, we can build out specific strategies by segment, and many of us already do this. It's sort of the major donor versus smaller donor level, and we at Weed and others are now building this out for a sustainer segment, monthly givers. It can also be done, and I've had some experience with this. We actually do some of this at Weed, and I've done some of this with previous clients, of building out more robust strategies by segment, looking at, you know, what is the right cadence, the right set of messages, frequency and timing of messages, the right channels, the right actually messaging or communication, and the right offers for this given segment, and really building out the best program by segment. It's costly and expensive. It's not something I would say is beginner level, and you need a fair amount of scale to it, but it could also lead to significant returns.
Jeff,
so
I'm sorry,
yep,
I want to jump in there for a second.
Just
realized we had a handful of questions actually asking you to explain co-ops and co-op models.
Sure. So co-ops, there are a number of major players in the nonprofit fundraising industry who have built co-ops. And what the co-ops are is they'll gather together typically hundreds of different nonprofits. Those nonprofits will submit their donor files into the co-op. You have to belong to the co-op. So, again, like Target Analytics, Blackbaud Target Analytics has a co-op, Wyland Direct has a co-op, Info Group has the Abacus Co-op. There's a number of these co-ops. and you submit your donor file, and they basically, let's say there's 100 nonprofits in it, they look at all the donor files of all 100 nonprofits in the co-op. They bump them up against each other, and what they quickly find is there's lots and lots of donors who don't just give to your nonprofit, but they give to a whole bunch of others as well. Any person who does not appear in any other nonprofit, only in yours, they typically give back to you. So the only ones that they keep in the co-op are ones who already give to more than one charity in the co-op. At that point, they then add in a bunch of additional data, third-party data, like you know, age, wealth scores, gender, etc., and they do some modeling around it, and they say, okay, you're from, you know, let's say I'm from public broadcasting, so we found that this set of donors tends to be responsive to public broadcasting, or if another charity is in the international relief category, these set of donors tend to be responsive to international relief charities, and they'll actually rate sets of prospective donors by decile. So top decile, second decile, all the way down to the 10th decile. So basically by likelihood, a propensity to respond, and size of likely gift. And they'll say, okay, these are the best people for you to target within our co-op, and that's a list that you can rent. Or depending on the co-op terms, you actually get it free because you've already paid into the co-op as part of your co-op deal. Let me know if people have more questions on co-ops. Co-ops are you know, definitely a big potential if you're not already using them for increasing or enhancing acquisition. So coming back to segmentation, you know, what I described where you're developing custom cadence, messaging, offer, and channels by segment is pretty complex and time-consuming. There are some simpler approaches. So, you know, one of the things that we're doing at WIDA right now is simply saying, okay, who on our file pretty much only gives in November or December? And we have a lot of those people who really don't give it any other time of year. And we're going to continue to solicit them some during the rest of the year, but we can send them a lot fewer solicitations during the rest of the year if we know that over a significant number of years, the only time they've ever given is at year end. And you may have others who, for example, only give in the January-February time frame. Who are the people on your file who only respond to renewal appeals? Who are those that only respond to non-renewal, or I guess what we often call it just the additional gift appeals or of a certain type? Who are the people on your file who are telemarketing responsive, either based upon your own data or all of the most telemarketing firms now have telemarketing responsive files, and so they can indicate who on your list is likely to be telemarketing responsive. So that those are good beginning places to start with, beginning to use data to segment your file and to save some money, increase response rates, and also, frankly, leave your donors happier by only sending them the communications or the solicitations they're likely to respond to. I would add that models and or other analytical approaches that are like models can be used for a number of different areas. Certainly telemarketing models. We have a telemarketing model right now. Upgrade models. We'll actually talk about an upgrade model in a moment to upgrade someone into, say, mid-level giving or major giving. Additional gift mail appeal models, renewal models, all of these areas you can build models around. You do need some scale to make the models worthwhile. At a more advanced level, we're not going to spend a whole lot of time talking about this, but advanced attribution modeling is something that currently is being done in the commercial sector, but I actually don't know if any nonprofits that are yet doing this. This is where you look at every single touch point from your nonprofit to a given individual, and then models and calculates the relative importance of each touch point. So, for example, it may be that someone donated to your nonprofit online, but before doing that, they may have received, you know, 7 emails, 2 mail appeals, had a telemarketing call, and seen an ad for you on TV. And it's really all of those things that led them to make that gift through your website. And through modeling, one can approximate the importance of each of those touch points and then determine where to increase investment and where to decrease investment. That is not the beginning level. That's definitely, you need a lot of scale, and it's advanced, and I expect it to come to the nonprofit side in the next couple of years. If you have other examples or thoughts later, I'd welcome them, or if someone wants to pipe in right now, I'd welcome that as well.
Well, Jeff, we have a question that speaks to segmentation. Someone is asking, how do you use segmentation to different demographics and still maintain a consistent branding for your organization?
Yes, that's a really great question. I'm only laughing because I feel like that's one of those philosophical questions that organizations can spend a lot of time debating, and I've been involved in some of those debates. You know, I think it helps if your organization has two things. One, some clear understanding of what is sort of required. So, for example, there are certain treatments of your logo that always must be used, and those are non-negotiable. That's fine, and those should be adhered to. And if your nonprofit has a fair amount of flexibility in terms of different styles of messaging to different segments, all presumably with, you know, consistent values, consistent underlying mission, but different types of messaging. So my guess is that most nonprofits on this call already use different styles of messaging on Facebook than, say, Twitter, and certainly in social media than, say, in the direct mail. And it may even differ from direct mail to emails. Similarly, we can have, by segment, you need to get some buy-in for this, but you can have somewhat rather different types and styles of messaging by segment and still be adhere to your mission and to what you're trying to achieve and to some of the very basic requirements for what communications must look and feel like.
Great, thank you.
So let's turn to a couple quick case studies, and then we'll have perhaps a few minutes left for Q&A at the end. So this is an example from WETA. We call ourselves WETA. One of the things that we found, one of our main forms of segmentation is we segment our donors by those that are TV affiliated. So the primary interest is on the TV side with all of our public broadcast and TV programming versus those that are classical music radio fans. And it turns out that it's a pretty important segmentation criteria for us. You can see here this is a return on investment for one mail appeal, and you'll see that we have it's actually a 60% higher return for those with the FM radio, classical music radio affiliation, close to $4.50 return on a dollar investment versus under $3, about $2.75 for the non-FM affiliated. And we've done head-to-head testing for FM-affiliated donors, which is our smaller group, and found out that in most cases the FM-affiliated messaging outperforms the sort of typical TV-based messaging. So if you have significant different groups on your file with different interest areas, finding those different interest areas and then targeting different messaging to them based upon those interests is a powerful way of increasing results. Another example from WETA is using models. We were talking a bunch about models. This is an upgrade model we recently had built. And on the right-hand side, you'll see 10 model deciles. So this is the first decile is the best 10%. The next decile is the 10 to 20%, the next best 10%, and the bottom decile is the worst 10%. And this is the probability of our main file, our membership file, of upgrading to our mid-level program, which we call Leadership Circle, starting at $1,000. And through this model, we were able to find in the top decile, 0.5% of those people upgrade. And that may not seem like a lot, but these are pretty darn valuable donors. So 0.5% is actually it's a pretty high percent, particularly when you compare it to the lower deciles. If you look at deciles 6 through 10, all of them have, you know, 0.04% or in one case 0.02%. They're extraordinarily unlikely to upgrade to Leadership Circle. So we can just forget about decile 6 through 10 in terms of who to target for upgrade messaging. We're focused primarily on decile 1, also to some degree on deciles 2 and 3, and then we're doing a little testing around deciles 4 and 5. In terms of what variables popped in the model, this is a modeling firm, or actually our direct mail agency that has a modeler in it, built this for us. You notice on the left-hand side, those elements, those variables that are highlighted in yellow are the ones that popped in the model. So donors upgrading from 24 months, from HPC 24 that upgraded then to HPC 12. So those that gave a larger gift in the most recent 12 months than in the previous 12 months, that was a pretty powerful indicator. HPC, or highest previous contribution, all time, was also a powerful indicator. Interestingly, HPC 12, 24, and 36 did not pop in the model. It was all time highest gift that was the one that popped in the model. Similarly, someone who had made a member service comment, that popped in our model. Someone who attended one of our events, that was important, as was the frequency of gifts. So those are the things that popped for us, and if you have a model built for you, you'll find that probably those types of variables, but perhaps somewhat different ones, will pop for you. Now turning to another nonprofit. This is from the Humane Society of the United States. They gave me permission to present a couple slides from them. This is based on geography, and I think a really kind of a simple but very interesting test. You'll notice the left two bars are mail pieces they sent to northern states, and in red, they sent to people in northern states, they sent fleece gloves. And in blue, they sent people in northern states garden gloves. And the first thing you'll notice is that the fleece gloves in northern states outperform the garden gloves by quite a wide margin. Then you look at the right two columns, and you notice those are all people who live in southern states. And the people who received the fleece gloves in the southern states did very poorly, and the people who received the garden gloves in southern states did a lot better. So, you know, clear, obvious case of geography making a difference. They obviously decide after this to send fleece gloves to people in northern states and garden gloves to people in southern states. And I've seen other examples where, you know, where geography can be a powerful variable for segmentation. One more example from the Humane Society of the United States. I mentioned earlier that, you know, among the not low-hanging fruit, but things that it's not so complex to start to look at is the online behavior, particularly the email behavior of your donors and prospects. And you'll see here four columns, and particularly the ones to look at here are the ones in blue, the net per piece. This is a mail piece. And if you look at, you know, the whole file that was mailed, there's a net of 27 cents per mail piece sent. If you look at people, the 0 to 12-month donors with an online gift, you notice they did a lot better. That's not surprising. They also gave an online gift. You'd expect that they'd perform better. They had 45 cents per mail piece. But the interesting thing is that third column, this is 0 to 12-month donors who also gave an online action. They did not make an online gift, but they just had an online action. And you notice that someone who took an online action was more likely to respond to a mail piece than the file as a whole, significantly more likely at 36 cents net per piece. However, people who had made an older, people who were lapsed donors, who were 13-plus donors with an online action, they were below average for the file. So online action was important, but not as important as a recent gift. And lastly, one more example. This is from the National MS Society. We did this a couple years back, and I think it's pretty interesting to think about more advanced demographic segments, such as affluent professionals or traditional retirees. And in this case, traditional retirees were more 60s, 70s, and 80s, sort of middle-income donors, whereas affluent professionals were more 40s and 50s, higher education, higher internet usage, higher wealth. And they had very different preferences for type of treatment. I know that the National MS Society has done some testing since then and found it difficult to prove out the effectiveness of these, I guess what I'd call, demographic psychographic segments. But I think this is a big opportunity for the future, if we can figure, as an industry can figure out, okay, what is the right type of messaging, for different segments based upon who the person is. And you'll notice, by the way, in this right-hand, example, this is this, a quote from Aesop was what was preferred by the affluent professionals versus more of a traditional acquisition direct mail control on the left side, which the traditional retirees and other segments preferred. So with that, I will turn it over to, I guess I have a minute for questions. I just have one last thing, by the way, a little pitch for WETA. We are currently recruiting for a senior director of data strategy and management and for a data analyst, people who will be working deeply in our database, and with data and analytics. We're looking for all-star applicants for both that senior position and the much more junior data analyst position. Please go to our website, weta.org, to find out more about them, or just email me if you're interested, or you know someone who might be interested, and you have my email address there, jregen@weta.org. And that's it. Margaret, am I out of time, or do we have a minute for questions?
You are so out of time.
Okay. Well, fair enough.
We do have some questions that were not answered, but like I said, if you don't already subscribe to Today in Fundraising, it's a free daily e-newsletter. Please go to fundraisingsuccessmag.com, sign up, and then you will be able to find your questions answered in an upcoming issue. We are so out of time, so on behalf of Fundraising Success and our sponsor, Melissa Data, I'd like to thank everyone for participating. Jeff, thank you so much for leading the session. It was great information. Please also visit the info booth and fill out our show survey to let us know about your experience today. And remember, if you miss anything, the entire show will be archived for 3 months starting on Monday. Have a great day, everyone, and thanks again. Bye.